Hello and welcome to The Two Tones. It's episode 7. I'm Tony Moclair, and joining me, my co-host in The Two Tones, aptly named, what are the odds of that, Tony DeBolfo.
Hello, Tony. Lovely to see you. Thanks you for the introduction, and what a week it has been.
It's unpleasant business, but we'd best address it. Your thoughts on Friday night?
Yes, well, you know, let's kick the elephant out of the room early. Yeah. Look, I heard perhaps there's been a lot of comment, obviously, Tony, in the hours and days since Friday night, but perhaps the most disturbing comment I heard was from, I think it was a supporter who said on radio, Carlton, born 1864, died May the 1st, 2015.
Wow, that's so dramatic.
That is dramatic, but I suppose that gives a sense of the hurt people are feeling for, not so much the loss, but how the loss was affected. People say, and it's true, that you know there are losses and there are losses. You can go down swinging or you can not front at all. Unfortunately, on Friday night, there weren't too many Carlton players there to play. So it was terribly, terribly disappointing and bitterly so given the milestone match for Mick Malthouse. And I think everyone felt for Mick walking off the ground at that moment. I should say also that before the game started, I happened to be on the concourse at the Ponsford stand-in behind the Black and White Army.
Yeah.
And when Mick walked out, to a man, they stood and applauded.
Yep, I've got to acknowledge that. It was magnificent.
It was.
Where I was sitting, same thing, and there was not a person who sat down. It was a really touching gesture, and it was really genuine.
It was.
By the Collingwood supporters.
It was indeed, and let's be truthful. for that milestone game, the coach certainly deserved better than what he got. For the next 2
Collingwood
hours.
Supporters were out of their seats a lot from the standing ovation for pretty much the rest of the game. How many goals did they stand up and celebrate? It was 18.
18, and 18 goal kickers. 18 goals kicked, and it was just a procession. And regrettably for us, probably Sam Doherty aside, you couldn't think of a player that could actually say, well, you know, I covered my man and I did what I had to do for the benefit of the team. You just couldn't think of anyone really that could, walk off feeling that way. So that was where it was so demoralising and depressing. And
what were the players thinking at the end of the game when Mick walked off and they lined up and he had to walk past them? There's some very interesting telling footage when he does walk past them. He can barely look at them.
Well, you know, I suspect that Mick probably, if there was an opportunity for him to be anywhere else other than where he was at that moment, he would have taken it. Because having to acknowledge the crowd, having just borne witness to, a non-event, must have been so very, very hurtful. And I suspect he would have felt let down. And he has every right to feel that way because he and everyone else of the Carlton persuasion looking on would have walked away from the MCG feeling we were let down.
Yeah.
And that's... It hurts to say that, but that's how it was.
There does seem to be something with milestone games. It reminded me of the last game at Princes Park, which we lost. The game against Hawthorn after Richard Pratt's death, which we lost by a straight kick. I remember Fevy. I'd always hoped that Dick Pratt from the heavens would just, two heavenly hands would emerge from a cloud and just bend the goalposts a little wider to let that one sneak through, but it didn't. But it kind of goes in the run of those games, doesn't it?
We don't have much joy there.
No.
If you take it back further, I can remember, was it Ben Harrison that sunk Carlton here for Richmond, former Carlton player, and Stephen Kernan's last game for the club?
Oh.
You know, and I can remember David Cloak bagging 8 in his last game against Carlton, last game of the season. We don't seem to get that right, do we, unfortunately? And you know, you think of even the great Bruce Duell, last game, the 86 grand final, wouldn't be carried off, which says a lot about the proud player that Bruce Duell actually was. But we just haven't seemed to get those milestone moments right in time, regrettably. It's just one of those things.
So this is yet another kind of desultory chapter in that particular narrative.
You just have to hope that, after serious soul-searching here this week, that we see a group of players go out there that actually, you know, have a crack for the dark navy blue, because that's all you want.
What is that process? Can you talk me through that? Because I saw Sam Rowe's press conference and there was an acknowledgement that the team had not tried hard enough and that work needs to be done, that sort of thing. He was at a primary school up around here. Is there any kind of recrimination? Is there any kind of mea culpas? Is there any what goes on as far as you know with the playing group after a game like that?
I can't second guess what the players are thinking, Tony. I'm not a psychologist, but I would imagine that it would have been serious soul searching all week, and it'll be interesting to see the team this week, because I suspect there would be recriminations. But in saying that, you have to have players coming in on form.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see which way they do go. I suspect Menzel will be a chance to resume. Mm. You've probably also had players like Watson who have fared all right, form-wise in the seconds.
Graham's another one.
You've got a lot of the ball at the weekend as well. And Mick is on record as saying, you know, he doesn't play players under sufferance. To get a game, you have to earn your spot.
Yeah.
And those players, I think, would have to be in the mix because they've at least shown something at VFL level. So I would think that after that performance Friday night, there would have to be changes, have to be recriminations.
What about the option X of dropping Bryce Gibbs?
Oh, jeez, it's a massive call. But, look, I'll say this. I would suspect that the coach and the match committee would want a statement to be made. Mm. In no uncertain terms, that what happened on Friday night was unacceptable. Acceptable, and someone will have to pay. Mm. I would have thought. So, as I say, it'll be very interesting to see how the final team actually shapes up.
We are, of course, playing Brisbane this week, and they have, you know, had a pretty tumultuous week themselves. There was reports of the coach slamming a player up against a wall, and for a moment there, I thought that might have been Mick and Bryce. But that is obviously going to affect their preparation. There's been a lot of media scrutiny on them this week because of that. But they're all... They said it was two passionate people who'd crossed the line. Justin Lepage said that about the... is it O'Brien, the player that he did? Which sounds like kind of the premise of a Barbara Cartland novel. or a kind of Hollywood romance. But... there is, as we said, a history between these two clubs.
Well, there is. You know, we've been on the wrong end of it, as you mentioned earlier. It suddenly looms as a fascinating afternoon because, as you said, Brisbane 2 is under the pump. How will they react? You would think that there'd be a few players up there that would be wanting to come out swinging as well, just to make a statement that, you know, what happened the previous week was unacceptable. So, yes, it's a bizarre state of events, I suppose. Looking at what has happened up there, Queensland footy is looking reasonably sick at the moment. And beware the wounded foe. They're going to be desperate, and Carlton will surely have to come to play, as they say, on Sunday afternoon to get over the line. Brisbane does have its concerns with injury. Brett Staker, I think, is highly unlikely of taking his place. Tom Rockcliffe was taken out by May of the Gold Coast Suns, got a fairly heavy head knock, which has been well documented. So I guess he's under some sort of an injury cloud also. So from that perspective, Tony, maybe the brakes will go Carlton's way, but you make your own luck too, don't you? You know, they've just got to come to front the game head on and show or win some respect back for themselves, the Carlton Guernsey, and to appease the supporters who've been asked and the members have been asked to part with their hard-earned to see a solid four-quarter effort.
Do it for their mothers as well, it being Mother's Day.
Well, it is. You know, it is Mother's Day.
Which reminds me of a story that... a mate of mine told me she was watching a TV show with the mothers of new Carlton recruits. I'm pretty sure I've told this story on podcast before, so bear with me if you've heard it. They had three mothers, one of whom was Sauce's mum. And they went to the first mother and they said, what do you hope for your son this year? And she said, oh, I just hope he gets a good run of games. The second mother, what do you hope for your boy this year? Oh, I just hope he gets through without injury. And they went to Sauce's mum and said, what do you hope for your boy? And she said, just that the coach plays him in a sensible position, that he gets the zones right. And obviously...
She was all over it, Rita.
Yeah.
Interesting story about Rita Silvani, and you also allude to the other mothers. I wonder if that was Mrs. Koutafoudis and Mrs. Rocker.
Oh, really?
The interesting linkage with all three mothers is that they were born within a 30-kilometre radius of each other in northern Italy.
Sorry, why has that area not been zoned off and incubated?
Forget Bendigo. Yeah. You want the province of Treviso, locked away as a nursery.
Thank you very much. Oh, I wish it was. Now, yes, it's Mother's Day, but also I think this is the first game the Carlton has played against Brisbane since Mitch Robinson started playing up north. What sort of reception do you reckon Robbo will get?
What sort of reception will
you give him then, Tony DeVolfo?
Look, to be truthful, Tony, my thoughts now don't extend to the Mitch Robinsons of this world.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the Carlton team
and
how they fare and what sort of showing they give. And I suspect there'll be a lot of... Carlton people looking on very, very closely at the body language of the Carlton players and how they go about it. So let's hope that in terms of Mitch, that we have a few players that bring that barnstorming, no-holds-barred game to the table. Let's fight fire with fire. I mean, we know that that's the way Mitch plays.
Yep.
Well, that's exactly what we need.
Yeah.
So let's hope that we get a few Robinson-esque performances from the boys in Dark Navy.
Couldn't agree more. And, well, look, good luck to Mitch, but he is one of many players that has played for both clubs. Do you want to just go through that list, Tone, and if any kind of anecdote or interesting fact about any of these players comes to mind, please share it with us.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I won't go through them all, but we'll just cherry-pick a couple. Stuart Glascott, brother of David, didn't play a senior game at Carlton and was only here for a brief period through the 1980s. I mentioned off-air earlier, Tone, that... Mr. Glascott, God bless him, before these kids were born, was actually living in a home he realised was in Fitzroy's recruiting zone. He was appalled by that and decided to move house even before the kids came along because no self-respecting son of his was going to play for anyone else other than Carlton.
That's awesome.
That's good on him.
That God is literally him. Taking one for the team.
That is great. Mark Buckley. Now, Mark and Stephen Buckley were the sons of Brian Buckley. There's a famous photo here, Tone, of taken in the early 1960s of six of Carlton's big men here at training side by side. Nichols, Graham Donaldson, Silvani, Maurice Sankey, Mark Buckley's father Brian and Ken Greenwood. Brian Buckley was a good footballer for Carlton through the 60s, and Mark and Stephen ran around for Carlton through that period of the 1980s. Tony Lynn, you alluded to earlier, was another...
Vera Lynn.
I think it was a Queenslander, if memory serves, came down.
Was he number 15? No.
Yes, he was, Tone. Number 15 was Tony Lynn. Good, honest player here through that last glory period of the mid-1990s, as was Brad Pearce.
Oh, love Brad Pearce.
Do you know, Brad Pearce, he just had that glorious, glorious left foot kick.
Yeah.
And I think what I remember of Brad Pearce through that period of time was that I can remember... Carlton meeting Essendon, big games through the course of that period, and Gavin Wanganeen, the Brownlow medalist of the year, a great player for Essendon, Brad Pearce used to tear him apart.
Yeah.
And he was just an extraordinary, on the scene for that very brief period of time, but what an impact he made, in a vital period of Carlton's history.
And he'd play with his hair, his hair up in a bun. He'd always play with it before lining up the goal.
Yes, so I've been on something of a personal crusade to ban the bun, actually. But
I'm with you there.
In 95, Brad Pearce got away with it.
Yeah.
All power to him. Also, Richard Hadley, another great player for Carlton. Geez, we could do with him now because he was really Lord Protector for Chris Judd. You know, he was a hard body around the ball that really gave Judd, you know, the blocks that allowed Chris Judd to strut his stuff. And when you think back on Chris Judd's career, you look at that period of time when he was at his absolute best, you would have to acknowledge that Richard Hadley helped Chris Judd's cause no end. So
That's a great point.
Brendan Favola, well, you'd have to say that Carlton got the better of that one with Brisbane and Lachie Henderson, you know, the trade. As good a player as Brendan was at that time, he would admit himself that the move to the Gabba was an unmitigated disaster. So we did well there. Sam Docherty, of course, we'll speak about in a moment. And Cameron Wood, who has absolutely extracted the utmost out of his career, having had to do it the hard way from the VFL. So there's been some interesting names in that eclectic mix, Tony.
Tony, you did mention Sam Docherty. He has re-signed for 3 years. It was a bright spot this week. He's put pen to paper, inked, as I said, a new three-year deal. So he'll stay at the club till the end of 2018. He arrived at Carlton through the 2013 trade period, up to 13 games with the Lions. He's a lifelong Carlton supporter. He has been on the podcast before. Docherty made his debut for the club in round 7, 2014, against Collingwood. And from there, he has, of course, held his spot in the team, running out in every game for the remainder of the season and finishing ninth in last year's BNF.
Yes, well said, Tony. And there is a great stat about those first five appearances that Sam Docherty made for Carlton. It would be a record that has never been set before, and I doubt would ever be emulated again. But his first five games for Carlton were played in five different Guernseys.
How does that work?
The Indigenous round.
Yeah.
There was the, you know, the away game. There was the white Guernsey. There was the traditional Guernsey. There was the old replica Guernsey.
Yeah.
I can't remember what else there was. There was five separate Guernseys, and I've always, you know, in another lifetime at the Sun newspaper, I can just see the photograph on the back page of the Sun now of him at a Hills hoist.
Yeah.
You know, had you the fifth Carlton Guernsey along the way. Why that photograph was never taken, I'll never know. But what a player he has been for Carlton. He was really a lone hand on Friday night. I thought he was the one player that actually, you know, came to take on Collingwood and really, really show some spine. There's been a great story penned recently by Emma Quayle that, you know, that judicious overseer of the draft and the players that come through the system. And she reported of how when Sam Docherty first came to Carlton, the players en masse were at Mount Humphreys over in America. And during that period, unfortunately, Sam Docherty, his eye blew up and they... Initially, there was this fear that he thought it might have been sty or something. Mm. There was this initial fear that it may have been a cancerous growth that had suddenly emerged. He had to, fortunately, that was cleared, but he had to deal with that fairly weighty issue. He then suffered a hamstring problem on the walk up the mountain, if memory serves. And to compound the problem, he got a phone call from his brother while they were out dining after one of the sessions over in Arizona. Ignored the call. The brother then called Shane O'Sullivan, the football manager, to advise, could you please get a message to Sam that his father had died back in Australia? So that was his first foray at the Carlton Football Club. And, you know, when you think of what he had to deal with, you know, having relocated to Brisbane too, a Phillip Island boy who supported Carlton all his life, was absolutely rapt to be at the club, and certainly the way you see him play, you can see the passion that he has for the place and for the Guernsey. But that was a baptism of fire for him, trying to start again and you know, resume his career at a new club, and then having to deal with all those extraordinary issues on top of that. Look, all power to him. He's been, you know, a real positive for the place. And at 21, you know, he's a lieutenant, I think, in the leadership group here. But we may see him elevated and hopefully just continue to lead by example, because right now Carlton needs leaders, and he's one of them.
Well, yeah, it's 3 years now. We, you know, all going well. He will see out his playing days at the Carlton Football Club, as you said, which he grew up barracking for, and does play with that kind of passion that befits the jumper.
Yeah, you know, we were saying before, weren't we, about the how zoning, you know, was such a great feature of the game. You know, and for Carlton, obviously, it was the Bendigo League, but also before that, it was territorial. You know, I think of back to players like Fred Stafford, who lived in Fenwick Street, man that sunk Essendon in the 47 grand final, walked to the ground. You know, and I can remember before he died saying to Fred, what'd you do after you sunk Essendon in a grand final? Can you imagine if he'd done that today? Well, in 47, he said, I went home. He said, I left my bags at the door, and then I thought I walked down to the club. There was a barrel on here, had a couple. That was nice. came back Sunday morning with the lovely wife in tow. We had a couple more, and then we went home. Monday morning was at work. Can you imagine that happening now? If that happened today, Fred Stafford would be given the keys of the city of Melbourne.
I wouldn't stop at the keys. Jeez, I tell you, it'd be... there'd be a procession down Swanson Street, and he'd he'd be given a Carlton sainthood, I think. Now, he would, of course, that anecdote would be mentioned in your book, I would hope. We Are the Navy Blues, the archives collection, Tony DeBolfo. You'd be keeping this one from me.
Well, I've been in bunker mode a little bit, Tony, these past couple of weeks, because there's an archive collection to be released, I think, around about July. It's to coincide with the Carlton Hawthorn match, because Hawthorn has also commissioned the publishers to do a similar thing. So there's every chance both books will be released when the Carlton Hawthorn clubs play. But I've been working with a couple of former Melbourne players, Brian Wilson, the 82 Brownlow medalist, who has misplaced his Brownlow medal, by the way. So if anyone's at the AFL's listening, a replica is required. But Brian Wilson and Jamie Dersmer are both involved in this project. And it's actually going to... It's more a book that's going to feature imagery, photographs, also collectibles. You'll see on the flyer you have there, Tony, that there's actual replicas made of important medals in Carlton's history. One of the medals featured is the 1906 Premiership Medallion. Now, I think it may have been Charlie Hammond, so I'm not 100% sure, but it's an actual replica copy of the medal that was awarded to him 109 seasons ago.
What was that medal for, Tom?
Being a premiership player. Oh, okay. Each player was awarded a premiership medallion as a commemoration. In those days, players also got caps that they would wear as a badge in subsequent Carlton games.
Oh, wow.
Which is amazing. It's a real sign of stature, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned running out, you're lying up at a bloke wearing a cap. You know, I'm a premiership player, you're not. Get out of my way. That's how it was then.
Hairstyles are too important these days to be ruined with a cap.
So very true.
Yeah.
But it's a book that will basically tell the story of Carlton's history in photographic form. There will be statistical information. There's also precious items of memorabilia, much of which have been locked away in the vault here and haven't seen the light of day. There'll actually also be lift-outs, little documents, first-hand recollections of players that have mattered in Carlton's history, about what the club has meant for them. And we'll also even have sneak previews of things like minutes of Carlton meetings of yesteryear.
Okay.
We've got volumes of those minutes dating back to 1908. And I myself haven't been through them all. There's just volume after volume after volume, and it'll take a long time for everything in those volumes to be digested. But what is significant about the minutes is that they tell a different story to the ones that were actually publicised about significant events that have happened in Carlton's history. So to give you an example, one little item that will be included will relate to Ron Barassi's appointment as Carlton coach in 64. So it's fascinating to read what the terms of that contract actually were.
Yeah.
The initial terms that were put to the Carlton board that were rejected, and the revised terms that were put to the Carlton board that were actually accepted. So I think what you'll see is a fresh take on Carlton history that is told through magnificent photographs, documents and various papers along the way.
And all with your, of course, you know, usual thoroughness and dedication, Tony DeBolfo. It is, judging by the flyer, a magnificent-looking book. The first 1,000 orders receive a limited-edition medallion, and each book is individually numbered. Is that correct?
Yes, that is quite correct. I think there's 3,054, which corresponds with the postcode of the Carlton area. And supporters, members have an opportunity to pre-order and in doing so have a photograph of themselves, perhaps in their Carlton paraphernalia, that will be included in the book. The images will be printed in the book, so they've got a very personal keepsake of a record of Carlton's history.
So now how do we do that, Tone? We go to carltoniconseries.com.au?
Tony, the books are available for pre-purchase at... Jamie Dersmer will be on hand at the Carlton Social Club on Sunday night after the game, and also at the President's Function, I believe. He'll also be appearing at a major shopping centre near you. So we're looking at, like, you know, the High Point, probably Northland, those areas. So also the Carlton Shop is a point of call for those who would like to buy the book. The book costs $179. But it's money well spent, I can assure you, because you'll need your truck to take the thing away. It's massive.
Well, just looking at the flyer, I mean, the amount of effort and... this is an extremely high-quality book. $179 is a bargain by anyone's measure. It is. And so well done to you, Tony, for such a fine literary effort.
Thank you, Tony. It's been a labour of love. You know, I thoroughly enjoy revisiting history, as you... Well, no.
Well, yes, I do. And I look forward to the next chapter where you can include the 2016 Premiership.
Oh, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Well, yes. Well, we'll see how we go at the drafting table. We say good luck to Carlton for the game against Brisbane this Sunday at Etihad Stadium, 3:20 p.m. It's 2-for-1.
2-for-1.
Bring mum.
I like those numbers.
Get on down there and give your mother something unique and special for Mother's Day, that being a Carlton victory. That's what we want. Tone, great to share the two tones with you. We will be back next week.
Thank you, Tone. Look forward to it.
Remember, we are the Navy Blues, the Archives Collection. You can pre-order now, carltoniconseries.com.au, or go to the Carlton website. Catch you next week.